Welcome to the No Meh Movies Podcast. How many times have you heard a movie is all right? It's average. It's just okay. If you ask your friends if you should see it and they say, meh. I'm Davey Barris and he's Darren Cross. And on this show, we'll break down and review these movies and decide once and for all if these meh movies are good or bad. And whether or not you should watch them. Because on this show, there are no meh movies. Now for a movie to qualify as meh, it must be between 40 and 60 on the tomato meters, Rotten Tomatoes, or it must be between 4 and 6 on IMDb. And the movie we are doing this week in honor of Godzilla vs. Kong coming out on HBO Max, coming out into theaters, wherever theaters are actually open, we went back and did the movie leading into it. Of course, it only makes sense. 2019's Godzilla, King of the Monsters. The 2019 Godzilla, King of the Monsters. There is an old Japanese version, which scores a 6 on IMDb and a 42% on Rotten Tomatoes, making it a meh movie. Spoiler warning, of course, for Godzilla for 35 different films or something like that that Godzilla's been in. Spoiler warning for Godzilla, King of the Monsters. We're going to be talking the whole thing. Darren, in case it's been a while since they've seen it, I mean, like a year and a half maybe, or they've never seen it before, what is Godzilla, King of the Monsters all about?
It takes place 5 years after the world has discovered that these titans, as they call them, which are the monsters, exist. And part of our main, half of our kind of our main family, Dr. Emma Russell, has developed this device that she can use to essentially speak to the titans. And so she is testing it out on a larva of, it ends up being Mothra, that they have essentially, they're holding in a not so secure facility that she ends up using it on. But right after she uses it on Mothra, some eco-terrorists break in and they kidnap her and they kidnap her daughter, and they take the Orca machine with them, and some carnage and action ensue.
Absolutely. All right, Darren, the question we ask of all our meh movies is, did the movie do what it was supposed to do? So, Godzilla, King of the Monsters, I mean, they've got it listed simply here as a monster film. I don't think it gets simpler than that. Did Godzilla do what it was supposed to do?
This week, I said this movie did do what it was supposed to do. You got exactly what you were sold as far as a monster movie. There's lots of monsters. They bring in monsters that aren't even really part of like the original monsters that were in the Godzilla movies. You know, they take some creative freedom and they just kind of show you other monsters. A lot of action, a lot of special effects, a lot of monsters fighting each other. I think I would say that this movie definitely did what it was supposed to do as far as what it was sold on being versus what it ended up being.
I believe that the director, Michael Dougherty, said that him and his writing team, they thought it was the responsibility to add some new monsters in. Like, everybody kind of adds a monster to the Godzilla lore. So that's why they added in some of their own creations.
I also read that they were having some budget issues as far as getting the rights to some of the other monsters that had been traditionally introduced into some of the original Godzilla movies.
Yes, getting the rights was a big step in this movie getting made in the first place. Like, once they got the rights, they knew they kind of had to make this movie. So Mothra and Ghidorah and who's the other one? Who am I forgetting?
Rodan.
Rodan. Yeah, those were the big ones that they got the rights from the Tokyo, the Japanese film studio. And they're like, all right, We're putting them in. We're doing it. We're doing all the monsters. So, yeah. So, all right. As far as did the movie do what it was supposed to do, in my opinion, yes, but it wasted a lot of time in getting there. Like, it really stretched this category for me. This is the hardest, like, yes, that I've had to give a movie so far, because and we'll get into this in successes and failures. We spend a lot of time with the humans, and I kind of feel like the humans' role in this is to kind of assume what Godzilla is thinking, assume what Ghidorah is thinking, and kind of like, because the creatures can't, right? Godzilla isn't going to sit down and be like, man, it's tough policing this earth, but somebody's got to do it. You know, like, he's not going to have an old cop monologue or something like that.
You think that's what Godzilla's English voice sounds like?
Just an old Western cop that's just seen too much.
Smoked too many cigarettes.
So that's obviously why you need the humans to exist in these movies, but there was a lot of stuff in here that I didn't care about. There was a lot of Senate meetings and family drama and, I don't know, scientist witty lines that I just, military people trying to do military things that I just didn't care about. But when it came to those monsters fighting, this movie definitely did what it was supposed to do. And, I didn't get a chance to watch. I did watch Kong Skull Island, but the 2014 Godzilla movie wasn't available to stream. So I wasn't able to go back and watch that. But from what I could gather, I'll be honest, I watched the CinemaSins video. If you ever need to just catch up on a movie really quick, CinemaSins is not a bad cliff notes. And they're funny. But that movie definitely was built as more of like a slow burn to this final showdown with Godzilla. Whereas this one, the director was very like upfront, like, we are taking the gloves off. This is going to be a bonkers, like, fighting all throughout the movie. Like, we are not holding back at all. And yeah, in those scenes, the movie did what it was supposed to do. Next category on our No Man Movies podcast is, did the actors bring it? And because they decided to, like, make this such a huge movie, such a global movie, they're like, we're just going to blow it out and make it an ensemble cast. Like, the last movie was very much focused on like a dad and his son who are scientists. This one, they're like, we're going to throw everybody in here. So it's a pretty long cast, but I think the main cast is pretty recognizable. Like, they keep the same faces in front of the camera for the most part. So we've got Kyle Chandler as Dr. Mark Russell. We got Vera Farmiga as Dr. Emma Russell. We've got Millie Bobby Brown as Madison Russell. Yes, the Russell family is all present and accounted for. We've got Bradley Whitford as Dr. Rick Stanton. Sally Hawkins as Dr. Vivian Graham. Charles Dance as Alan Jonah, the eco-terrorist or something, the former British Army colonel. Thomas Middleditch as Sam Coleman. Aisha Hines as Colonel Diane Foster, O'Shea Jackson Jr. as Jackson Barnes, David Stratham as Admiral Will Stent, Ken Watanabe as Dr. Ishiro Shirazawa, and Zhang Ziyi, I believe it's Zhang Ziyi, as Dr. Eileen Chen and Dr. Ling. She played two characters. Yeah. I don't even remember. Yeah. But and then a couple of other people. So that is your main cast. Like I said, it's a pretty big ensemble cast, and that was in no particular order. That's just the order they have them on the Wikipedia page. So, Darren, with all of those people in it, who was your top performer who brought it?
I ended up going with Millie Bobby Brown in this movie. So she plays the daughter of... She plays Madison Russell, who's the daughter of Dr. Mark Russell and Dr. Emma Russell, who are our other main characters, I guess you could call them. And part of what like ties them together and what influences a lot of the movie is the fact that 5 years ago, when these Titans were discovered, they lose a family member, a son/brother, who gets killed in all this craziness. So there's a lot of fallout that is still in play from all of that. So Millie Bobby Brown plays Madison, who's in like this weird situation where her parents aren't really together anymore because they didn't know how to handle losing their son and, you know, blame each other to some capacity. And so she's sort of stuck in the middle living with her mom. So living with Emma, who's doing all this research on the Titans. And so she's very much involved. And I just thought she did a good job of sort of playing that that child is sort of stuck between her parents in an awkward situation. And then the other part of it is just like, I think she, from her experience working on Stranger Things, I think she does a pretty good job in like these intense action scenes where her reactions to things and they just seem very genuine. And like she plays this sort of like kind of half brave, half scared character really well, where like she's brave enough that she like tries to do things that make sense or would be logical, but is also scared because you remember that she's still kind of like a child. I don't know if they say her age in this, but I think like maybe like 12 or 13.
Yeah, actually,
or
yeah, on the Wikipedia they say 12 years old.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and so you really, she does a good job of balancing that sort of like, you, she's still a kid enough that she's like scared by things you would think kids would be scared by, but also has this little bit of like determination / intelligence to like handle situations. And that comes through really well in her acting, and you believe it. And so, so yeah, I think if I had to pick one, it would be her for this movie.
All right. Excellent choice. Cause she is fantastic. And I'm a huge Stranger Things fan. And look, she gave a look at in the final battle scene. I think when she's like trying to get back to her like family house or maybe at Fenway Park, she gives this like look that 11 on Stranger Things gives like right before she's about to get pissed off and use her powers. Yeah. And it was the same look. I was like, She can have her powers in this? No, she doesn't have her powers in this.
Yeah. Is she going to just kill a Titan on her own?
yeah, so that's definitely a good choice. And I think people were really impressed. It was her first, like, it was her first film, I believe. So she took that step from TV into films. And I'm guessing Millie Bobby Brown's going to have a pretty, pretty good career. Pretty big career.
Yeah, yeah.
I went with, for my top performer, it's a little bit of a smaller role, but Ken Watanabe as Dr. Ishiro Shirazawa. Ken Watanabe, again, we talk about, did the actors bring it? I know he doesn't have a ton to do in these movies. Like, he's kind of there just to say Godzilla. And I think in the Honest trailer, they just did a supercut of him just staring. Him just staring at the monsters, staring at screens, staring thoughtfully. But Ken Watanabe, everything he says, you hang on his every word. You want to... The biggest fail in this movie is that we didn't get a scene with Ken Watanabe and Charles Dance together, who played Alan Jonah. Charles Dance, who you'll probably remember from Game of Thrones, who played Tywin Lannister. They're two of the best talkers,
yeah,
in recent cinema that we have today. Like, these two in a scene together, I needed that. I needed them to go toe-to-toe and like monologue to monologue against each other. So we didn't get that, unfortunately, but I thought every scene that Ken Watanabe was in, every conversation he had, was actually meaningful. Some of the other conversations the other human characters had definitely did not feel as meaningful. This one was pretty meaningful. And everything he said was pretty meaningful. So I gave him my top performer. He's a great dramatic actor. He just pulls you in.
Yeah, I totally see that. And I'll get into more of that when I get to my successes and failures too.
And a little bit of trivia early here. But there was an earlier Japanese Godzilla King of the Monsters. And there are definitely some things that were pulled from that movie that they used in this, including the oxygen bomb. And in that movie, in that old Japanese movie, there is a Dr. Shirazawa. And Shirazawa goes down to set the bomb off underwater. And so they kind of brought that back. There's a lot of things I feel like that they paid homage and paid tribute to the early Godzilla films. I am no way an expert on the old Godzilla films, but this was something I picked up in the trivia that, so the character of Shirazawa and him sacrificing himself with that nuke to kind of bring Godzilla back was a little bit of homage, a little bit of poetry to the older Godzilla films.
Cool.
All right, Darren. Now we are moving into successes and failures. The big themes of this movie, the big ideas in this movie. What worked for you? What didn't? And if you've been paying attention in season three, you know that we get into this now by talking about themes. So Ken Watanabe actually has an interesting theme, which I'll bring up in a second. Let's see if it's the theme that you picked up. What was your big theme, and was it a success or a fail for you?
My main theme that I picked up on was sort of this this balance that supposedly exists between human and Earth, or human and nature. I gave it a mostly success, but I think they could do even more with it. So just this idea that if man sort of takes advantage of nature for too long or goes too far with it, then Earth is going to respond in some capacity. And in the case of Godzilla, it's literally in the case of monsters destroying things that humans have created for the sake of Earth sort of refreshing itself or rehabilitating itself. And I thought they did a pretty good job of that. I think you could do more of it. And I'm not going to say a ton about it because I kind of like roped it into my sequel. So I'll talk more about it there. But I would say that they got most of the way there of presenting that to be, I'd say it was like a 75% success, 25% failure.
All right. So yeah, obviously like the humans being the bad guys and, you know, pollution and the eco-terrorism and all that. Like, yes, that's kind of the theme that they kind of hit you over the head with. Ken Watanabe had a great take on this. He noted that the film's theme was, in the 21st century, we need to think about natural disasters. The creatures are symbolic of natural disasters. We cannot control them, but we must live on this planet.
Okay, so let me say something. I swear I did not read that, but that's my sequel.
Okay, we'll see where it goes. We will see where it goes.
Because okay. it became very clear to me, and what the kickoff in the movie is that so Rodan, how do they say it?
Rodan, yeah.
Rodan. He or she or it or whatever emerges from a volcano, right? So it's like very symbolic that like this could just be a volcano. So I think this whole idea of if each monster represents a natural disaster, then it's like a very clear cut, because they kind of like do that a little bit, but they don't fully explore it as much as it could be explored.
Godzilla always comes out of the ocean, so probably a tidal wave, probably a tsunami.
Yeah, maybe, but then Ghidorah is also sort of like a water storm.
Oh, Ghidorah, yeah, Ghidorah was a storm.
He's like sort of like a hurricane. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't read Ken his thing, but I'm glad he said it. Good for him.
Right on. Yeah, it is a good take, and honestly, I didn't pick up on it. And when he said it, I was like, oh yeah, I see it now. My theme was we don't know as much as we think we know as humans. Like in these movies, they're always discovering lost civilizations. They're discovering like pocket tunnels inside the core of the Earth where Godzilla can travel. And and societies that I don't know if it was a sunken city like Atlantis or if it was always down there. But yeah, so I feel like in these monsters, like not knowing, obviously this whole town gets built on the side of a volcano and they don't know Rodan is in there. So yeah, so I feel like we don't know as much as we know about the Earth and how the Earth works. I really don't think we know. I mean, the mysteries of the ocean, we hardly know anything about like the bottom of the ocean.
Right. Yeah. It's like, it might as well be another planet. Like we really don't know a lot.
Yeah. So that was kind of the theme I was picking up because everything these humans thought they knew, there was so much more that they didn't know. They figured out that like there were a lot of ancient things. And I think even in Kong, Godzilla vs. Kong coming up, there's something in the trailer. There's a line about there was an ancient fight or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there might even be some flashbacks. Ooh, we might get some flashbacks in that movie. So that was kind of the flashback theme. What's that?
I said I love a good flashback.
Yeah, everybody loves a good flashback. And I feel like we need to set up a Family Guy cutaway. So that theme was a kind of a success for me. The humans did not know as much as they thought they knew.
Yeah.
As much as they were struggling to keep up.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's fair.
All right. What else you got in successes and failures?
I'll do an easy one. At least I think it's an easy one. I gave a success to the special effects. I thought they were pretty darn solid. Although I agree with you to a point that we do spend a lot of time with the humans. There is definitely still a lot of monster fighting that goes on. And I thought the monsters look good. And I thought that I liked that there was the sort of, at least I thought I noticed was like, you never got like a full clear picture of them. It always seemed like you were looking at them through like rain or like something, you know, like, so like, which, I mean, it's kind of hard to be like, oh, that's realistic. That's how it would be. Cause like, you know, we're talking about giant monsters, right? So what is realistic, right? But yeah, I like the natural elements were brought into the special effects. And so like maybe the idea was we were kind of seeing them at a point through the eyes of the characters of the movie. But yeah, the fighting was great. I thought the like sort of like power up things that Godzilla and Ghidorah had, those were real cool. So overall, I just thought that the special effects were pretty solid.
Yeah, I also had the fighting as a success. I love that shot of Godzilla and Ghidorah running at each other. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's in a good Boston, one. The two, and those heads, the snake-like heads, yeah, are just kind of slithering as they run towards each other. Yeah. So that thing about filming in the rain, a lot of times they'll do that because it helps. It helps with the CGI. Like you can obscure things more at night. You can obscure things more if it's raining. Obviously in the bright sunlight, it would be more obvious. The CGI would be more obvious. It would have to be more perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, so that's definitely a trick, but it works in this situation, especially when they are representative of natural disasters. Did you have a favorite fight?
You know what I really liked? I liked when Godzilla took off one of Ghidorah's heads, but then the way they cut it or edited it, it looks like Ghidorah is like reappearing, but it's actually just his head in Godzilla's mouth, like shaking it around.
So that was kind of my next success. Godzilla has a finishing move.
He does.
Like that was a straight up Mortal Kombat finish him. Like that was, you have to tap back, forward, up, down, X, A, B, A, B, A, B. And then Godzilla does that, you know, like, and then he breathed the blue flame through it. Right. And then swallowed it.
Yeah.
That's a Mortal Kombat level finishing move.
What would that be? Would that be a, Not a fatality. Let's see.
Yeah, flawless victory.
No, but remember, there's like so many. They created so many. Like it was.
I think
there
was
more than
just.
There
was
like
fatalities.
Fatalities and I don't know. There were so many.
Scorpion would like pull off his head and it would be the skull, and then he'd breathe fire.
Yeah.
Classics. So I had that finishing move was literally a success. Like, because that's a whole nother level. There's the fighting, and then there's that. Like, that was pretty cool. Favorite fight. I kind of like seeing Rodan versus the Air Force. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's cool with like his, that he's like kind of always on fire, sort of.
Because he's from an active volcano.
Yeah.
He's the fire god or something. They say something like that.
Yeah, like the, yeah.
But that spin move he does, when he does that spin move, I guess this was the first like visual effects shot they showed to the studio. Was him, Rodan, doing that move or him fighting the planes. When he does that spin move and takes out like 8 different jets at the same time, I was like, that's a good move. Which leads me to my first fail.
Okay.
Big giant flying thing versus fighter jets. Not a great plan. Not a great plan. In fact, everything that the military does in this movie, not a great plan.
Yeah, every time, a lot of poor decision making.
has a gun ever hurt or stopped one of these Titans?
They're gonna shoot anyway.
Never. No matter how many bombs they fire, no matter how many missiles they shoot at these monsters, it does nothing, and all they do is get wiped out every time. How many pilots lost their life in these battles? Even the oxygen destroyer, the Megabot, which is also from that Godzilla King of the Monsters movie. Even that bomb hurts Godzilla, but it doesn't do anything against Ghidorah.
No, Ghidorah's like, nothing.
The military is just awful throughout this entire movie.
Useless.
Yeah, and they keep flying in there. They're like, we're going to help Godzilla out. It's going to be Godzilla and us versus Ghidorah. Like, no. No, it's not. It's just Godzilla versus Ghidorah.
So what you're saying, though, is you agree with Dr. Emma that you're just like, we just got to stand aside and let them figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we can't fight a tsunami.
No, it's true.
Can't fight a hurricane.
Yeah.
No matter how many missiles you shoot at it. You can an asteroid.
True. We've
what
seen
was that movie?
Several movies.
Bruce Willis.
Armageddon.
Armageddon. Thank you. That would work.
Yeah, there's no asteroid Titan. We need to get one of those.
I guess Ghidorah kinda. I mean, Ghidorah does come from outer space.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I'll do my first failure was, and I think, I don't know if it's expected or what, but like there were several like Asian references / jokes, which like didn't really land for me, which I wasn't a huge fan of. Like the one, I don't know which character she was playing at the time, but Zhang Ziyi, whatever you say it. I don't know if she was playing Dr. Chen or Dr. Ling at the time. But she says something, and then Sam Coleman, who's played by Thomas Middleditch, is like, did she say gonorrhea? I heard gonorrhea. It's like, yes, she said gonorrhea, because that's the thing that makes sense right now. And like, so you're mocking an Asian accent, or an Asian person speaking English with an Asian accent. And like, it's supposed to be like a cheap laugh, but it like, it just... I don't know. I wasn't saying I was offended by it. It just wasn't funny. Like,
Thomas Middleditch was brought in to obviously like lend a little bit of humor to the human stuff, but nothing works. Nothing really works for me. He's gotten a string of just like a-hole characters, just awful characters.
A piece of trivia that I read that I'll say now is that I think they were saying like one iteration or one part of the script that was written that ended up changing was that his character Sam and Dr. Mark Russell, who's played by Kyle Chandler, were supposed to be like old friends rather than like just meeting, which I think would have done better, because then, you know, if they have their little like back and forth quips to each other, then it feels maybe a little bit more natural than instead of like two perfect strangers who just met being like kind of like jerky to each other, then it just kind of feels awkward. But if they have like a past, then like maybe it's funnier or more genuine. I don't know.
Oh, apparently Dr. Chen and Dr. Ling are twin sisters. That's why she plays both of them.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah. My next fail. Once Ghidorah puts out her call and the Titans wake up, there's like a good... We spent like a good half hour of the movie with the humans trying to wake Godzilla back up and trying to come up with a plan. And in that time, millions, billions of people are dying.
So, yeah, they really underscore the death and destruction.
Like, I mean, legitimately millions of people are dying while they're like taking their little submarine ride down to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Usually a movie would time itself up so that like maybe the creatures, the Titans, all come from like remote places and it's like, oh no, this monster is walking towards Moscow, or this creature is coming down from the North Pole towards London, and like we've got 20 hours before it gets there. You know, usually there's some like clock running like that before the destruction happens. Instead, they just show these monsters just wrecking shop, just destroying cities. And and the humans are like, let's take a boat ride to the bottom of the ocean. Let's go 10,000 leagues under the sea here.
Yeah, yeah. That's 20,000.
Yeah.
20,000 to you, sir.
20,000 leagues under the sea. I only got about halfway through the book on my last vacation. I'm legitimately reading it. It's a good book.
I read it. It's good. Yeah.
So yeah. So that's
a good transition though into a success of mine.
Okay.
That the scene with Ishiro, who's played by Ken Watanabe. And again, I think this is a credit to him and his acting. Like, I felt the feels a little bit between him and Godzilla right before he sacrifices himself, you know? So obviously, you know, we said spoiler alert. So he elects to, so that they decide that they're going to set off a nuclear bomb because Godzilla feeds on radiation, right? That kind of like powers him, if you will. And so he elects to go take it, to essentially deliver it to Godzilla and then set it off, which essentially obviously killing himself. But yeah, there's like a bit, partially because of the way it's set up earlier in the movie, where he clearly has a positive feelings for the most part towards Godzilla. He thinks that humans and these Titans can live together, you know, they can cohabitate somehow, or and so it translates well into him sort of sacrificing himself. And there's a very specific moment where he touches Godzilla's face and Godzilla kind of wakes up and like is clearly looking at him. And so I gave that whole scene a success. It, without getting into the whole, so I recently watched the series Chernobyl. So without getting into the fact that I don't know, with the amount of radiation happening, if he really would have made it even as far as he did, but
no, his skin would have been melting off.
But that, I was willing to forgive that for the sake of this movie, or for this scene. And so, I gave that scene a success because I did, you know, sometimes when movies have animal characters and you're able to establish that sort of human animal connection, I did feel that a bit in that scene.
All right. That's fair. So you thought that Godzilla saw him saw Shirazawa and was like, hey, dude, respect.
Yes.
Okay. Not, yeah. He didn't look at him and went, what are you, who are you?
No.
If you were sitting in the grass and an ant crawled on your leg, like, you don't think he looked at him like that?
No, he looked at him like, I know you're here to help.
All right. Right on. All right. The only other fail I had written down was that the movie waited almost an entire hour before they let Charles Dance talk. That's a crime. That's a fail. That's not a nitpick. That's a fail. That's all I got on that one. He's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I have another success and another fail.
Okay, keep going. Keep rolling.
Okay. I gave a success to the soundtrack, minus the awful made for this movie or for some Godzilla movie song during the credits. It is terrible. It's like some like alt rock band, like I don't even know, like Puddle of Mud or something of that nature, playing as original song about Godzilla, and it's just awful. But
now hang on now because that might be the Godzilla song is actually written by the band Blue Oyster Cult.
Ugh. It was terrible.
It was a tongue-in-cheek tribute to the popular movie monster of the same name. I think it was actually a song from the 70s.
Is that the one they played, or was it a remake of it?
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, I liked the rest of the soundtrack. I thought the rest of the soundtrack, I mean, it was mostly like a score, right?
Yeah.
But I thought it was good. Yeah, yeah. And then do you have more, or do you want me to keep going?
Well, I was going to say it was composed by Bear McCreary. He was the composer.
No idea.
There you go.
There you go. Do you have more successes and failures, or are you out?
No, to be honest, I mean, I've kind of already hammered the humans. Like, I thought that the humans were a fail and the monsters were a success. So
yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at.
All right. I'll say one more. I've one last fail that I'll end on, was they packed a lot into this movie, and I thought it felt like, as much time as we spent with the humans, it felt like we like too much happened in the, even though with the movie was over 2 hours, it was like, whoa, like a lot has happened. It felt that way. And so I gave it a fail, because I think you had more than one movie in this movie. I think whereas other movies have been too much, and you're like, you could have cut this down, and you know, there was too much fluff. There wasn't fluff in this. It was just like there was too much content. I think it would have been cool if they did like a two-part thing of some capacity, and you could have ended the first movie with Godzilla quote unquote dying. That could have been the end of the first movie.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You think he's dead, and you know,
I mean, it was something they wanted to put in there, not a fake out, but it's something they wanted to put in there in the middle of the movie, because it's never happened, I don't think, in a Godzilla movie.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my last fail.
It would have been interesting. I mean, they got the rights to all these monsters and wanted to use them. Like, you could have easily had a Rodan movie and then a Ghidorah movie.
Yeah.
You could have introduced Mothra. Like, yeah, maybe Godzilla vs. Kong makes sense first, and that's what wakes up Ghidorah, the two of them fighting.
Yeah.
And then this would have been the third. This was supposed to be a trilogy, so I guess Godzilla vs. Kong might be it's technically the fourth in the monster verse, and I don't think they're stopping with a trilogy here. I think this monster verse is going to run a little bit longer.
Yeah.
We'll see how the financials work out from this, you know, HBO Max release. So yeah. Yeah, there was a ton. I was surprised. So like, they're like, the first movie wasn't, I believe the first Godzilla movie wasn't even a known monster he was facing. I believe they invented a new monster for him to fight in that first one.
Yeah.
And then they do Kong Skull Island, which is set in the 70s, which is set right after Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And then this one, they're just like, and here's everything. Go.
And I think what contributed to it partially too, is that there was like, especially with Emma, you're like, it kind of kept going back and forth. They're like, all right, no, the monsters are good because they're going to do this. Oh no, the monsters are bad because they're going to, now they're doing this. Oh, but if we let them do this, then they're still good. And then and they're like, it felt like a lot. It just, I don't know. The opinion of if they were going to be positive or negative for Earth in the end, like kept bouncing back and forth.
Well, speaking of opinions, Darren, that's enough of our opinions. It is time to hear what the Rotten Tomatoes critics said about this movie. Like we said, it ended up as a 42%, not a great score on Rotten Tomatoes. What are you feeling? There's a lot to choose from this week. What are you feeling, fresh or rotten?
Let's go rotten first.
All right. Okay. Oh God, why did I pick this one? I'm never going to be able to say this name. Okay. Yudita Junjunwala. Oh, actually did pretty good on that. From Live Mint. She said, it's just a big budget waste of resources that weakly attempts some eco-warrior gibberish and leans heavily on disaster movie cliches. Now, we've already talked about the eco-warrior part of this and the planet Earth, you know, save the planet part of this. Disaster movie cliches. Do you feel like this was cliche, or do you feel like there were some unique things in here with what they did with monsters?
I thought it did some fairly cool, unique stuff, but I think that comment to me just like sort of, you could apply that to every disaster movie or every sort of movie in that vein. I mean, like, I don't know what a unique way to show the world being destroyed looks like if you're trying to make this sort of like epic disaster movie. I mean, yeah, they do kind of all share some similarities, but I don't know how else you do it, right? How is there a better way to show a building crumbling on top of people? Or I don't know, like, what about you? How do you feel about that?
I didn't feel like it was, I wouldn't say cliche. I mean, yes, any monster movie, we want the two monsters to punch each other in the face. Like, that's just the nature of monster movies, right? Like, so are you cliche or are you fitting the genre? I thought that the fight, like, I didn't see some of the moves in the fights coming. I didn't see the way the monsters would try to hurt each other and stuff like that. I thought there were some pretty interesting things there. Like I said, Rodan's spin move was pretty cool, pretty unique. The way Ghidorah wrapped its heads around Godzilla and was kind of like squeezing the life out of Godzilla.
Yeah, I thought that was also pretty, like, heating himself up at the same time.
Yeah, that was pretty unique. So I think there was some unique stuff in here as far as the fighting goes. Yeah. All right, another rotten review. Adam Naiman from The Ringer, he said, it's one thing for a blockbuster to skillfully mix tones. It's another when nobody involved in the production seems to have been decisive about managing the overall vibe. Did you feel a mix of tones? Were you bouncing back and forth?
No, I think that, I don't know. I feel like the tone was pretty similar throughout. I could see how those little like funny jokes that they tried to slip in here and there, like, sort of would have messed with the tone a little bit, but I think you could get past it. They didn't overdo it. I mean, I didn't like when they did it. It felt out of place, but other than that, I feel like the tone was pretty level throughout the movie.
Yeah, I thought the villains did have a, as dumb as their plan was, they did have a clear plan, a clear goal in mind. The pace of the movie kind of never lets up. It's a pretty relentless pace. We're always running off to somewhere or storming something or some monarch base or, you know, attacking a monarch. You know, the pace keeps moving. I don't know, maybe he's talking about the whole, like, we need to destroy all the monsters. No, we need Godzilla to save us. That's kind of the central argument of the movie rather than the tone changing. So, mm-hmm. No, I don't agree with that either. A mix of tones. All right, time for some fresh reviews. Perry Nemiroff, another YouTuber that I very much enjoy listening to, she said, it's exactly what I needed at this time of the year. For the most part, I was along for the ride and fearful for these characters. So two things, Darren. Is this exactly what you needed right now? Did you need to watch this movie right now? And then, were you fearful for these characters at all?
I wouldn't say I needed the movie, but I did grab onto and enjoyed the climate change analogy, if that's how you wanted to read it. I did, you know, I think nowadays pretty much any movie you make that could have that sort of symbolism is applicable and can feel relevant just because of how the way the world is. I would say I felt for Ishiro. I felt for him. And I felt for Madison. I think I felt for her being in a difficult situation, having to kind of choose between mom and dad, and at the same time also like trying to keep herself alive when I mean she put herself in the situation of being by herself. It was her own fault for doing that, but I think I definitely felt at least for the two of them.
All right, fair enough. It is what I needed right now. I was actually looking around the other day for something to watch during my lunch break. And yeah, these big monster fighting movies, it's fun. It's much more fun than like sitting down to watch a serious movie on your lunch break.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did need a little fun. So it was what I needed. And no, I didn't. I wanted to feel fearful for these characters, but I didn't. And we'll get into it in quick picks, but... You know, let's get into it right. I'll say it right now. Like Madison, what was her plan? What was actually her plan? What did she think was going to happen when the monster showed up?
Oh, you mean after she used the megaphones?
After she steals the orca, yeah. Like, what was the actual plan?
Yeah, it's true. Because she's got the binoculars looking out for him, and then she's like, "Oh man, here they come." And then it's just run for your life.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Our last fresh review. Let's balance this thing out. All right. This goes back and forth on here. Some people have said the sound effects were a fail for them. Tim Cogshell from Film Week, NPR Los Angeles, said the sound effects in this movie are extraordinary. That roar that Godzilla does, I got to tell you that I kind of love that. I might make it the dial tone on my phone. Sound mixing is something we don't often get into on the No Men Movies podcast. Did the roar of Godzilla work for you?
Yeah, I think it works for me. It is like it's an interesting mix between like, here's why it worked for me is that it's sort of a mix between dinosaur and whale. And so I thought that they tied it in well in that, so the name of this machine that they use to try to mimic the sounds of these titans is the orca, right? And I think Godzilla's yell has a little, like what you've heard how whales sound in real life, you know, from watching nature shows or whatever, that was incorporated. Like there's some tone or something octave that it hits that reminded me sort of like a whale call combined with like a dinosaur roar that like, you know, thinking back to like Jurassic Park or something like that.
Yeah, I am all down for when it comes to monster movies. I want it to be like room shattering, shaking loud. Like I wanted to shake my eardrums. I want to feel it in my chest. Like, you know how you feel fireworks that are really loud, like in your
the
chest?
Bass. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to feel it. Yeah. And Godzilla in the original Godzilla, the T-Rex in the original Jurassic Park is probably the best example of that, right? That roar at the end of that movie is just perfection. And yeah, they did a pretty good job here too. Every time Godzilla shows up and he lets out a roar, and I am like, hell yeah, let's do it, Godzilla. I want to put a saddle on his back and ride into battle with him. But yeah, that was something the director, they really pushed in this movie. He wanted to sound close to the 54 incarnation of Godzilla. So they really try to get back to the original sound, that classic Godzilla sound. So yeah, that was something that they took a lot of pride in. It was a success. It worked for me.
Yeah.
All right, Darren, that's a lot. That's a lot. We've talked themes. We've talked so much in this sound design now. Let's take a break from all this. It's time for us to pitch a sequel. And we know where you're going with this. So if you are writing the next Godzilla movie, and in all fairness, Godzilla vs. Kong is coming out this weekend. If you're doing the next Godzilla movie, what are you doing?
So if I'm going to go with this tying the Titans more to, really tying it to like climate change and natural disasters and stuff like that, I think it would be kind of cool to like put it on to the level of like a almost like a dystopian future kind of movie. So like, what if we look at this movie and things have not gotten better, right? Or I guess it depends how you define better. So the Titans have fully exercised their power as it would be expected they do if they're trying to recalibrate Earth based on the damage that humans have done to it. So if there was a movie, a film that sort of either it could be as this is happening or like very soon before or very soon after, where obviously there's still a population of humans that survive. And so kind of what that would look like as far as the, if it's after, do the monsters just then hibernate again? And because like, all right, Earth's back to the way we want it. It's good. We're done. So I think you could have a movie of sort of like, and again, it would have to be like another like epic action movie, massive special effects. But I think you could have a movie where like very much Earth is on the brink of fully being given back to nature, and like where, what does that look like? Can the humans, is there still time to make changes or adapt or do something? Or is it like, do they just have to fully give in to like, this is an inevitability and you just have to deal with it, and we kind of have to hit the reset button?
All right, interesting. So yeah, you are definitely doubling down on this, like, it's time for the Earth to reset itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Theme. All right. Yeah. I feel like some movies and TV shows have tackled that issue. There was that one TV show where like all the power goes out in the world, and then they like flash forward 5 years later and nature is just like taken back over the cities. Mm. We've gone back to like an agricultural society.
Interesting.
It was an interesting concept. Not a great TV show.
You see that a lot in like dystopian futures that post zombie apocalypse, right? Or all infrastructure is gone, etc.
Yeah, well, if these Titans have their way, that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going crazy with my sequel. Okay. So Godzilla and Kong are fighting each other in the next movie. Spoiler for a movie that hasn't even come out yet, but there are some people out there that think maybe there's a swerve coming. Maybe everything isn't as it seems in the trailer. And that this battle between Godzilla and Kong isn't everything you think it's going to be. So I'm going to assume that Godzilla and Kong are both standing at the end of this movie. Now, Ghidorah is not from this Earth, right? That's what made her special, made her different.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's from an alien planet, are there other Titans out there in space? So here's my pitch. Now you've got the setup. Here's the pitch. So some monsters come down. Like there's like some asteroids or something come down, and some monsters come down, and Godzilla and Kong need to team up and fight them. And after they win that battle, they go, however those creatures got to Earth, Kong and Godzilla take the ride in the opposite direction. I'm taking Kong and Godzilla off Earth. So they go to this other planet full of Titans. And it's basically, if you know what the Planet Hulk storyline is, like Hulk leaves Earth in the Marvel comics, and it's kind of what they did in the last Thor movie. And he basically becomes a gladiator in this other world, and he has to fight in this other world. That's what I want. I want Godzilla and Kong to have to go to this other planet and become gladiators and battle other monsters to be not only the kings of Earth, but the kings of the Milky Way, the kings of our galaxy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Godzilla.
So
King of the galaxy.
King of the galaxy. I really want to spend more time with the monsters and less time with humans.
That's terrifying, though, because I think people are already afraid of, like, regular normal-sized aliens. So now you're making them giant monsters.
There's nothing to say they can't be. I mean, dinosaurs roamed our Earth at one time.
That's true. That's true.
All right, Darren. All right, now that we're done with that, now that we're done with that fun, it is time for quick picks. It's time for our nitpicks of our movie. It's time to pick out those last little things we loved. What do you got for me this week in quick picks?
My first one is, do you think Dr. Emma is like the coolest mom in the world for letting Madison like come with her to her job when she's like going to birth, or not birth, but going to release a giant moth? Or is she like an idiot mom because you're like, why are you bringing your child into this madness?
No, she is the worst mom in the world.
Okay.
Like, I'm like, what? I'm like, okay, it's a twist. Yay, we're really at a secret military facility. But then, like, bringing her down there?
Yeah, I know. It was a cool thing. So Madison and Emma are in the house, and you have no idea that they're, like, in the middle of the Amazon, right? It's not, you have no clue until they pan out real far. I'm like, oh, cool, they're, like, a research facility. But then Emma goes to the research facility, and Madison's just with her. And I'm like, oh. Okay, sure.
Apparently Mothra does not do daycare or homeschooling.
You mean Monarch?
Monarch, yeah.
Yeah, no daycare in the Amazon.
All right. My first nitpick. Hey, it's Antarctica. You think anybody wants to wear a hat? I mean, in the winter in Cleveland, I'm not going outside for more than 10 minutes without a hat on. And they're in Antarctica.
It's true.
I know you want to see your beautiful actors' faces. They all should have been wearing hats. Not to mention, it's very confusing when your terrorist bad guys are wearing the same outfits as your monarch good guys.
Oh, right. They're all wearing white. Yeah.
Very confusing.
My next one was, if they were going to try to breed, I don't want to say breed, it's not really the right word, but couldn't they have like played around with Mothra as like a smaller thing? Did it have to be gigantic Mothra? Like, was there an option to breed a dog sized Mothra before you put together the gigantic Mothra? Or was it just the only option, was the giant Mothra?
I guess the only option was a giant Mothra.
Okay.
Even a dog-sized butterfly would be
terrifying.
Yes. See a big yellow jacket and you run for the hills. Could you imagine a dog-sized butterfly? On a three-headed monster, why is the middle head always in charge? Why can't the left head ever be in charge?
I think because it's like it gets all of the good stuff from both sides, and so it's the, you know,
the other side, the side heads are always idiots, they're always the lackeys. The middle head's always in charge. Speaking of which, if you had to fight a three-headed monster, how would you do it? Would you run straight at it like Godzilla did?
I don't know. That's tough because, like, you know, your traditional monster fighting, you're like, oh, distraction and then attack. But you have to try to distract three heads. That seems hard.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
I
Like,
would.
go for the feet. Feet.
Oh, there you go. It's one body. I think I would circle. I think if like whatever you if you circle left or circle right, I think I would circle left. That way, you're always facing like one and a half heads. Like that third head is always behind. So you could deal
Yeah.
with that left head until you defeat it. So that would just keep circling.
Yeah. Or specifically for her, maybe trying to take out the wings. Because I think the ability to fly really puts her at an advantage for a while over Godzilla.
Yes, she does the ultimate like drop,
Yeah.
body drop off the top rope, right? Like she takes him way up into the clouds. Off the top of the steel cage. Oh my God, what carnage! All right, what else you got?
My next one was, I'm glad that Mark's loud whispering didn't stick around for too long. At the beginning of the movie, he was doing that, like, I'm whispering, but I'm talking really loud. Like, like everyone else was talking in normal volume, and he was doing like his best, like, Batman impression or something. I don't know.
That's interesting. Kyle Chandler is Bruce Wayne. I could see it. I
Yeah,
could see a
I think it
world where
could
that
work. Yeah.
happens. All right. Well, you're going to make fun of Dr. Mark Russell. I'm going to make fun of Dr. Emma Russell. How did she just have an end of the world pollution PowerPoint presentation ready for her threatening phone call? She just
I
had that
totally
all
noticed
queued up.
that
Oh, man.
maybe she'd been really preparing for this Zoom meeting for a while. Clearly, with these monarch facilities being like high prof, or they're studying very important things. You would think their security would be a little better. Like, these, I know they're like eco-terrorists, so I don't want to say they're easy to defend, but they're breaking into these facilities like no problem. No problem.
Yeah. I think what it was actually what I said earlier. They have the same outfits and they had the same helicopter. So they were coming in, they
Yeah.
were pulling the old Star Wars maneuver where you like come in on an Imperial ship with the clearance codes.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. There was a lot of, I mean, Monarch is, who's funding Monarch?
I don't know, the government,
They have
maybe?
subs and planes and jets and military people all over the globe.
And those are fancy helicopters. Those aren't your standard helicopter.
Yeah,
They're
that's
fancy.
insane. All right, I'm skipping a few here because I got a bunch and we're going very long on this episode. But at the end, when she's in Fenway Park and she's luring the monsters there, and the news, she has the news up on the TV screens. Again, millions or billions of people are dead or dying. And that news reporter is basically reading that news like it was any other Thursday evening news. She's like, the single greatest disaster in human history. Coming up next, what foods might not be healthy for you? You know, like she's just, the cadence never changes.
You know what? She's a true professional.
She should sound like one of those military reporters that are like out in the field, like all hell's breaking loose. Like she is so calm and collective.
Consummate professional to the end.
Yeah.
I have two more and then I'll
All
be
right,
done.
hit me.
Who's the guy we were talking about before we started recording?
Bradley Whitford.
Yeah. This was kind of him the whole movie, and I guess this is kind of his character a little bit, is in all stuff, but like he has this like kind of like California surfer-ness to him, even though I think he's from Wisconsin. But like at one point, Dr. Mark is like doing something that he like doesn't agree with or thinks is weird, and he's just like, "What are you done, Dad? What are you done?" And he like says it very much with that like California surfer accent. What you doing, Dad?
Dad, what you doing, dude?
All right, Dad.
Yeah, he was a strange character. He was a strange character. I didn't like him or hate him. I hate to say it, I might have been meh on him. All right, my last one is that Madison, good plan at the end of the movie. She hides in the bathtub. Everybody knows in a Ooh. Disaster, you hide in the bathtub.
Yeah.
But when they pull her out of that bathtub, she's not breathing, and she comes back to life with no CPR.
Yeah.
They just they go, just... Madison, and she just wakes up, and air just fills her lungs again. I think you have to perform CPR. You actually have to do a chest compression
to
get someone's lungs starting again.
It does just kind of happen, doesn't it? So I hope you appreciate my last one that I have. Davey and I know from experience, from secondhand experience, how great of a ballpark Fenway is. It's great.
It's great. Fantastic. You ever seen the grass at Fenway?
Yeah. Have you ever had a hot dog at Fenway? It's
the
just
best. Oh, it's great. You're at Fenway?
Best. Oh. Absolute best. So I assume that Fenway Park's sound system at full volume can broadcast the whole world. Is that
obviously
accurate? Yeah, okay. Just wanted to
obviously
make sure.
I did. I mean, it worked for Ghidorah. She's an alien titan monster.
It's great hearing. She can hear.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with it was at a frequency.
Yes.
That the sound waves just traveled.
Okay.
And they just, yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I just thought it was.
I thought about that too.
I just thought how good Fenway. It's probably just Fenway's elite sound system.
It's a story maybe me and Darren will tell one day. If you ever meet us at a bar, we'll tell you the story about Fenway. All right. I do want to say something nice. I want to say something nice about Aisha Hines and O'Shea Jackson Jr., who played two military people. Oh, apparently they're members of the G team. That's what they're called in the movie.
Ooh.
They were very good as that like military role. They just didn't get to do any much.
No.
I mean, they were barely in the movie. I guess Aisha Hines kind of had the like that, like, I know I'm supposed to be a Green Beret and like a military leader, but what are we doing? She was like the only one that was kind of like, okay, I guess we're going in.
I guess we're going to fight the giant monsters. Sure.
Yeah. So it's nice to see some characters show some doubt. So I thought they both did good. It was a very, very limited role.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Darren, that is the end of our quick picks. Are you ready for some trivia before we go out?
Yeah.
Well, how long do you have? Because this is single-handedly the longest trivia page. There's 552 trivia items on IMDb.
Let's hit them all.
So, yeah, I know. But it took me 3 hours to get through all this. So, we're going to play a game. I'm at the top. I'm just going to start scrolling. Darren says stop. I will read that piece of trivia, whatever it is. All right, so here we go. We're scrolling. The Monarch outpost Castle Bravo is named after the thermonuclear device detonated as part of the Operation Castle nuclear bomb test at Eniwetok Island, Bikini Atoll. Castle Bravo was the first test of high-yield thermonuclear devices, was detonated on March 1st, 1954. The energy released 2.5 times the predicted amount.
That is a piece of trivia if I've ever heard it.
Wow. Okay, I did not expect that. So, okay. Castle Bravo gets its name from a nuclear test. All right, there we go. All right, and we scroll where we stop. While Sikla. Okay. While Sikla has arachnid-like legs resembling Kumanga, his body and head resemble Ibira. Does that mean anything to you?
No. No idea what you just said.
I'm guessing Sikla is one of the creatures they created. Yeah. And they're, this trivia fact is showing us that it resembles some other creatures.
We've also never heard of.
There may be too much trivia in this. There may be. Let's go one more. Let's go one more round. Because okay. I will tell you, the cursor is not even halfway through at this point. So go ahead. Shout it out whenever you want me to stop.
Stop.
According to Gitesh Pandya, Godzilla King of the Monsters is en route to hit a franchise low worldwide cumulative. In a recent tweet from the box office guru founder, the worldwide numbers were broken down and they weren't exactly glowing. China, 123 million. US, Canada, 94 million. Japan, 20, and so on and so on and so on. They were headed to about 400 million global box office. Yeah, this movie did not clean up at the box office. It was not as successful. Yeah. Every one of these Godzilla movies has slowly made less and less money. And if you take the production budget and add in the marketing budget, that's basically breaking even.
Yeah.
So who knows what the future holds for Godzilla?
I can't imagine it. There's only been like 40 movies.
Yeah. Maybe a 2-hour and 12-minute movie with every monster wasn't what the world needed.
Can I do one quick piece of trivia?
Hit me. Of course you could do one piece of trivia.
So one of the metaphors for Godzilla from that was determined like from the some of the original movies was one of two things. It could just be that he was a metaphor for nuclear weapons in general, but specifically a metaphor for the United States in the World War II era. So since these were Japanese made movies, Godzilla himself was sometimes analogous or a metaphor for the United States of America as being kind of this crazy, powerful monster that can just destroy things at will if they want to.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, I wish I would have gotten a chance to do more Godzilla research. I thought about going back and watching one of those old movies. I don't know. Sometime I'll sit down and watch the old ones.
Yeah.
I mean, we had one as a kid growing up, I think, on VHS. We had some Godzilla movie. All right, so for trivia, for the lesson this week, I was going to look into bioacoustics is a real thing. I couldn't find anything on the alpha frequency, but I wanted to talk about submarines. How deep do you think a nuclear sub can go?
10,000 feet.
Well, no. 10,000 feet would be about... Oh, I take that back. 10,000 meters. We're in meters here, Darren. This is nautical.
Excuse
Come on.
Me.
10,000 feet. 10,000 feet would be about... No, you're still way too deep. So according to Dive and Discover, it's in .edu, so we know we can trust it. A nuclear submarine can dive to about 300 meters.
So it's like 900 feet.
Yeah. The average depth of the Caribbean Sea is 2,200 meters, or about 1.3 miles. The average depth of the world's oceans is 3,790 meters, or 12,400 feet, or 2.3 miles deep. So if Godzilla is resting at the bottom of the ocean, I don't think you're getting a submarine down there to visit him.
Yeah, that's the pressure is intense when you get down there.
Not to mention they crashed their sub, don't forget, at the bottom of the ocean. I guess they did say something about them getting pulled down, but no. That thing would collapse like a aluminum can at a tailgate party. All right, Darren, we have reached the end of a long podcast for a long movie. It is time for us to decide once and for all, Godzilla King of the Monsters, is it a good movie or is it a bad movie? What do you say?
All said and done, this is going in my good movie file. We talked about its failures and things that weren't so great, but in the end, I thought it was a pretty fun monster movie. I thought I got what I wanted out of it. The special effects, the action, monsters fighting each other. Even if we spent a little bit too much time with some of the people and not enough time with the monsters, I got enough of what I wanted. And then I was pleasantly surprised by this sort of, and again, this was coming in with very little background about knowing much about Godzilla. So I was pleasantly surprised with this sort of analogy that they breached to some capacity about the Titans and how it relates to Earth and, you know, climate change and the survival of Earth and Earth naturally sort of setting itself. Like if humans don't do it, then it's going to do it itself in the case of this through monsters. But yeah, so I'm putting it in my good movie file.
All right, there you go. Darren says good movie. I'm going to say Godzilla King of the Monsters for me is a bad movie. I just could not. If I were like recommending someone to watch this, I couldn't do it. I couldn't tell someone to watch this. You know, like what I would do is I would sit them down and I'd pull up the YouTube clip of just like the fights, right? Like the one or two fights that I really liked. I really think aside from like I'm thinking like three big fights. I can't get over the rest of the movie. Maybe if this would have been a shorter movie, maybe if it would have been more focused on one fight, one battle, or if it is really going to be King of the Monsters, then more monsters. Give us more monster fighting, you know? Give us that woolly mammoth-looking guy fighting a spider-looking thing. Like, let them all fight. I just could not. The humans just killed me. Every scene with the humans just took me out of it. But I will say that the monsters fighting was fantastic. So I really enjoyed that, but it was just not enough to push it into the good movie category for me. So I think you've heard I had enough successes, I think, in this movie to give it a fair shake, a thorough review. And but I'm sticking bad movie on this one.
Well, when I rewatch it every single year, I won't invite you.
On the anniversary of today. I think I enjoyed Kong Skull Island a little more.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. We'll see how this next one does. All right, Darren. That is it for this week. That does it for Godzilla King of the Monsters. Coming up next week. There's another movie coming out in theaters. It's called Nobody. It stars, what is his name? Bob Odenkirk. That's right. Bob Odenkirk is getting a tough guy action movie. Tough guy dad action movie specifically. Mm. So we needed to go out and find the toughest dad we could find. That also was a mad movie. And that took us to 2008's Taken. Liam Neeson, our tough guy dad, has a very particular set of skills, but it was only good enough to get him a 59% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is a 7.8 on IMDb, so I'm guessing we're in for a pretty good movie here. So next week, we will be discussing Taken in all the detail that me and Darren take these movies through. All right, that does it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on whatever podcasting app you are listening on. You can follow us on Twitter at No Meth Movies. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Barris. Thanks for supporting the show, everyone. And the next time your friends ask about a movie, take a stance and tell them if the movie is good or bad. Because on this show, there are no meh movies.